may have violated guidelines. Prosecutors also investigating. I'm Lisa Brady, Fox News Radio.
Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling is a live call-in radio program providing doctrinal dialogue, cultural commentary, and insightful interviews with some of today's foremost Christian authors and leaders. Knowing the Truth is the outreach ministry of the Mountain Bridge Bible Fellowship, located on Highway 25 in Travelers Rest. The goal of the church and the radio program is to seek the glory of God in the salvation of sinners and the sanctification of the saints by the ministry of the Word. For more information, go to www.knowingthetruth.org. Here with today's edition of Knowing the Truth is Pastor Kevin Bowling.
Hey, welcome into this Thursday, September 25th edition of the Knowing the Truth radio program. This is Pastor Kevin Bowling, and we're talking about an interesting subject today. It's actually a subject that came to the forefront 2 years ago, almost on this very day, just I think on the 22nd of this day. An article was written in Christianity Today magazine, and when that article was written, it was entitled Young, Restless, and Reformed, and it was an article about the resurgence or the comeback of Calvinism and the way that that comeback was shaking up the church. Well, the author of that article is Colin Hanson, and Colin Hanson is the editor-at-large for Christianity Today magazine, and Colin is with us via the phone today, and so we're going to talk about this article that he wrote and a book that he wrote since then by the same title, Young, Restless, and Reformed, and looking at these, the article and the book, going to ask Colin to articulate for us what he sees in this resurgence of Reformed theology. How does that differ from what he saw 2 years ago when he first wrote the article? And what sort of feedback has he received about these things? And all of those questions surrounding this particular issue. So with that, let's launch right into it here today. Colin, welcome to the Knowing the Truth radio program.
Well, thanks for having me again. It's great to be here.
Well, Colin, you heard that little bit of an introduction there. I don't know if you realized that was the date that you had written that article. You read a lot.
Yeah, I hadn't thought about that. That's a good point.
Yeah, I got here that it was September 22nd, 2006
okay.
is when it was posted out on Christianity Today. And what do you think? 2 years have gone by now. You've probably received a lot of feedback. I know it was one of the most read articles
sure.
and it made the cover of Christianity Today.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people
right.
went out there and bought that issue. Tell us a little bit yeah. about it.
Well, in that that article that came out in 2006, that was a product of about some months of reporting and travel across the country, especially going to the Together for the Gospel conference in Louisville in 2006. And that was really something of a coming out party for what's going on with Calvinism, and especially as it was manifest among young evangelicals today. At that Together for the Gospel event, the leaders of that being Mark Dever, Southern Baptist pastor from Washington, D.C., C.J. Mahaney, founding pastor of Covenant Life Church in the D.C. area, also Al Mohler from Southern Baptist Theological Seminary, president, and Ligon Duncan, the first Presbyterian in Jackson, Mississippi, a former moderator of the PCA. Well, anyway, those guys, this was sort of them kind of bringing their friendship and kind of opening it up for other people to see and to participate in. They got 3,000 people to show up. I remember Mark Dever at that meeting. I remember asking everyone, you know, different ages. So everyone's banned if you're 60 or under, and then all the way down. And the biggest group was in their 20s.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember that being just a, you know, a thought right there of, wow, it's almost like a pyramid here. You know, they brought in John MacArthur, John Piper, R.C. Sproul to speak. They're a little bit older than those guys,
mm-hmm.
those four guys. It's kind of like they're, you know, they brought in their heroes, and then kind of the pyramid expands a little bit to that generation of, you know, in their 40s and 50s with those guys, with Dever and Mahaney, and et cetera. And then kind of the pyramid really grows bigger when you consider the younger people. So that was kind of my initial, the photos that we had from the article were drawn from that event and really was kind of a coming out party for a lot of the stuff that had been going on for a long time that I reported on that article, and then, of course, the book.
Now, the actual assignment, if I understand it right, that you were sent out to look at was the idea of the emerging church, or this came on the heels of you looking at the emerging church. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's right. Basically, I was an associate editor for Christianity Today. I was responsible for our news coverage and other things, and I was a few years out of college at that time, so I was the youngest editor on staff. And I remember there was a lot of talk at the time. We had recently done a cover story by Andy Crouch about the emerging church called The Emergent Mystique. And I thought he had a pretty insightful look at what was going on there. But his observations about the emerging church being this kind of big phenomenon, and that was, I guess that wasn't so much what Andy said, but it was kind of the way we talked about it on the staff. This is kind of like the new big thing. And certainly it's a pretty popular thing, but I was the youngest person. I was recently out of college. I knew a lot of people this generation, and I didn't know anyone who was, for example, reading Rob Bell, or who was really going to Solomon's Porch, or into, you know, stuff that Tony Jones and Doug Padgett were writing. Mm-hmm. Now, a lot of that was just my experience, of course, the circles I happened to run in. Mm-hmm. So my sort of this assignment I gave myself was to head out there on the road and to find out, is this just me, you know, who's experienced this, you know, reformed theology in a new way as a young Christian, or are there other people who have traveled the same path? And so I decided it was a little bit from drawing on my personal experience, but also my journalistic investigation. And what I found was certainly my experience was not alone, and in fact what's happening in reform circles is certainly more prevalent in established places like seminaries and churches than what's happening among the emerging church, and probably is a little bit more of a widespread phenomenon.
Mm. I was reading a review of your book by Tim Challies, and of course you know Tim, and I've had Tim on the broadcast before, and just really appreciate his reviews. He references in his review, he gave you a very good review on the book, of course.
And, that was kind of him.
Yes, and then when I did the search on his site, you know, it came up that Tim, shortly after he had written the review, references a friend of his who had written kind of behind the scenes. I don't know if you got a chance to read that. And his friend's name escapes me right now, but you can find it out on Challies. But he was basically, the point the fellow was making in his blog was, you know, are we just preaching to the choir? Are we just talking about ourselves here? I don't know if you're familiar with that or not. But
I just know what you're talking about.
Okay. And he was just kind of saying that, yeah, we see a lot of these numbers increasing, but wait a second. You know, here you are, a Reformed guy on a Reformed radio show, it's being reviewed by a Reformed blogger, you know, being read by people that lean towards Reformed theology. So he was trying to say that, you know, are we living in our own little world here, and is that skewing our image as to, or our data, as to whether there really is a rise in Reformed theology or not? What do you think about that?
It is skewing our data, but only if the argument we're making is that Reformed theology is the leading expression among evangelical Christians today. Mm-hmm. Whether you're going to use a subset of 18 to 35, which is the group I was using, or however you want to confine that, if that's what you're trying to argue, I can offer you no evidence that that is the case. I encountered nothing of that sort. I think the point that was made in that article was that, well, let's look at how many books John Piper has sold, and let's compare that to how many books Joel Osteen has sold.
Right.
So really, what's the big deal? Mm-hmm. I wasn't comparing, and I'm not. It wasn't in the article, and I didn't in the book, and I don't think we should be obsessed or concerned about comparing the size of these relative movements. What I'm looking at is Reformed theology in the 1960s and 1970s was fairly well relegated to some ethnic circles of the Dutch in places like Western Michigan and Northwest Iowa, places like that, as well as among some, you know, Presbyterian circles. That's all well and good, but you just didn't have the sort of, you know, really popular level interest that you have now. back in the 60s and 70s. What I was contrasting was from there to now.
Mm-hmm.
And the big difference is that, you know, if you think about, let's just take the 20th century evangelical movement in America. You think about the intellectual leaders of that movement. You think about people like J. Gresham Machen, Carl Henry, Harold John Ockenday, people like that. These are reformed. There's always been an element in which a lot of the leading intellectuals and that theological capital of the movement comes from the reformed world. And that's something that we're starting to see once again in a way that was normative in previous decades, but was not in the 60s and 70s and 80s, for example. So, you know, certainly there's a lot of, you know, incestuous theological behavior going on, but it doesn't mean that the phenomenon is insignificant, or we shouldn't, from my perspective, really rejoice in this, even when there are other things like the Osteen phenomenon that we should rightly be very concerned about.
Right. Well, excellent point and excellent answer to that question. We're going to turn a page on this when we come back from the break. I'm going to ask Colin about, let's define the idea of Reformed theology. There's a tough one for you. I think people define it differently. And so we'll come up with some sort of a good working definition. And let me tell the listeners that if you're interested in reading Colin's original article, I have posted it out on the website, www.sermonaudio.com/knowingthetruth, under the eDoc section. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling. For more information about today's program, the radio ministry, and the resources we offer, go to www.knowingthetruth.org. From Woodruff Road Presbyterian Church, here's Pastor Carl Robbins.
Just as the usual and continuous behavior of our enemies is to keep on mistreating, so the usual and continuous behavior of the believer towards these people is to be doing them good, blessing them with our speech, and praying for them.
Join Carl Robbins for the Presbyterian Pulpit, Sundays at 12 noon, here on Christian Talk 660.
Here's another academic tip from Dr. Everett of Strides Nonprofit Tutoring.
The easiest way to teach math is money. In this day of credit cards, too few children handle real money. To teach your child the basics of adding and subtracting, just give a few coins at the checkout counter and say, "Buy me some gum, please." Our website is www.stridestutor.org or call 246-9898.
Hey, Ruth, what's going on?
Hey, how you been?
I'm doing good. How about yourself?
Oh, I'm okay. You know, with the gas prices and everything, I just filled the tank of my car, and I spent almost my whole rent for this month.
Yeah, I know. Those gas prices are just outrageous. But you know what? I heard about CDBs. Not only do they have great pizza, but if you bring your gas receipt in, you get a dollar off.
Oh, that's great.
So you can take your whole family, have a great night, and still have some money left for gas money.
Oh, that's great.
It's great pizza for a great price. So pack up the family and head over to Speedy B's near Walmart on Woodruff Road in Greenville. And don't forget to bring your gas receipt for a dollar off the already amazing low price. At Speedy B's, you'll find friendly faces and at least a dozen pizzas out at all times. Or you can order a pizza. They'll make it fresh just for you at no extra cost. So visit Speedy B's today.
Welcome back to Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling. Information regarding the resources referenced on today's program can be found at www.knowingthetruth.org. Now, here to continue with today's program is Pastor Kevin Bowling.
Well, let me ask you a very serious question here. Is Jonathan Edwards your homeboy? If he is, then you're probably reformed. You're probably one of these young, restless, and reformed that we've been talking about, because that's on the cover of Colin Hansen's book, Young, Restless, and Reformed, A Journalist's Journey with the New Calvinists. And if Jonathan Edwards is somebody that you really appreciate his writings, you'll see that there is a strong tendency in his writings towards the Reformed theology. That's what he writes about. That's what he, the basis of all that he has written. And so we're going to talk about that in just a minute, but I just want to give you an announcement about an upcoming movie coming out tomorrow. We're going to go ahead and just play a clip here from the promotional clip for the movie, and then I'll tell you what we got here in the studio for you.
As a firefighter, Caleb Holt is a hero.
Ma'am, I'm Captain Holt from the Albany Fire Department. We're going to get you out of here. We have a car on the train track.
Let's go, let's go! 1, 2, 3!
But his home life is a different story.
Catherine and I were in love when we got married, but today, we're two very different people.
We fight more than we do anything else.
Now, in order to give his marriage the second chance it deserves...
I want you to hold off on the divorce for 40 days.
He must reach within to a place he never thought to look.
I'm going to send you something in the mail. Take one day at a time.
Every day has me adding a new concept to the way I treat her.
My advice is go all out.
With each day comes a new challenge.
You know, Caleb, you're not fooling anybody.
This whole love dare thing, it's not working.
And each challenge is harder than the next. From the creators of Facing the Giants, Kirk Cameron.
Marriages aren't fireproof. Sometimes you get burned.
Fireproof. Never leave your partner behind. In theaters September 26th. Rated PG. Parental guidance suggested.
Well, there's a little promo for Fireproof. I know a lot of people have been talking about this movie. I got a couple items here in the studio that I'd like to give away to any of the callers today. I have a couple tickets for the Saturday 6:50 showing of the movie, $7 tickets each, but we got two of them here for you to give out. I've already given out another two previous to this, but these are provided by Whitefield Baptist Church in Belton, South Carolina. This is in Anderson, Amstar 14 in Anderson. So if you live in that region or if you want to take the trip out, I think that's about 30 minutes or so here from the Greenville area, then we'd like to provide these tickets for you. Now, even if you don't want to go or can't go for some reason yourself, you may know of a couple in your church who may be having trouble in their marriage that you would like to be able to send to this showing of the film. That's fine. You know, if you want to call in for that reason, that's absolutely fine. You just got to come by the studio and pick up the tickets, and we'll be happy to make them available to you. Also, I've got some T-shirts provided by the folks there who put together the film, Fireproof, and so I've got a couple of those T-shirts here as well. In fact, let me put one of these T-shirts right with the tickets. So we'll do the tickets and a T-shirt, and then we have a T-shirt just separately. You call in. Let me give you the number, 1-888-660-WLFJ. That's 1-888-660-9535. Now back to our discussion with Colin Hansen about Young, Restless, and Reformed, about the resurgence of the Reformed faith that Colin wrote about in an article and now in his book. His book is published by Crossway Publishing, and so you can go out to Crossway's website. That's www.crossway.org if you'd like to get a copy of his book. Colin, just before the break, we were talking about some sort of a working definition of what we mean by Reformed theology. Would you like to articulate one for us?
Yeah, I'll take a stab at that.
Okay.
One way, I mean, the place I think to start with Reformed theology is to describe it as a view that emphasizes God's sovereignty, God the Father's sovereignty over all things, okay, including and taking the initiative in conversion. Okay, so I think you can trace the biblical storyline and see throughout the history of redemption this emphasis on God's initiative toward us, okay,
yes.
Sovereign initiative.
Yes.
So that's how I kind of start with it. Now then, when we're talking, for the purposes of what I'm talking about, when I'm writing about Reformed theology, there's particular emphasis on the 5 points of Calvinism, okay, so we're talking total depravity. I'll just rattle them off. If you want to go into any more depth, we can talk about that
sure.
in a little bit. But total depravity, unconditional election, limited atonement, irresistible grace, and the perseverance of the saints.
Mm-hmm.
Now, one thing I did include, though, in the book, people who would go beyond that definition, and they would tie Reformed theology to the Reformed confessions. So we're talking here about the Westminster Confession of Faith in particular. Now, that would one major difference there, of course, is that I talk about a lot of people who are Reformed Baptists. whereas Westminster and the Presbyterians who follow that will be very quick to point out that, of course, Westminster has a covenantal view of baptism, of infant baptism.
Right.
So then they might. So there's a little bit of disagreement on that point, but that's the working definition I use, at least.
Okay. Well, that's great. I think that that just gives people an idea. As you mentioned there, the sovereignty of God is what is central in all of that teaching. And then, as you articulated, the 5 points of Calvinism, as they're called, and then holding to the confessions, of which I think even the Baptist confessions are very close, except for, as you with that one exception that you mentioned there. So that's certainly a good working definition for us here today. Now, you in the book here, you really kind of take this journey then. It's almost autobiographical, I think, was the way that Challies wrote about it. Not about a person so much, but about a movement. And you go to all these points or places of interest within this movement. I think you start off at the Passion Conference in Atlanta, Georgia. Let me read off a few of these. Let's start with the Passion Conference and give us the sense of what you know jumped out to you that got your attention here.
Well, the Passion Conference strikes me as a particularly important place for understanding the influence of John Piper among young evangelicals. I believe it was his talk in 2000 that had just tens of thousands of students present in adverse weather conditions listening to him encourage them not to waste their lives, but to spend their lives on spreading the gospel of Jesus Christ. And I think it helps you to understand a little bit of, you know, why are all these young people just suddenly interested in John Piper, who's basically, you know, pulling most of his thought from this old Puritan, Jonathan Edwards.
Mm-hmm.
And also when you look at, so these people don't necessarily come to the Passion Conference Reformed. A lot of them come from Southern Baptist churches that definitely aren't Reformed and end up going to Piper. They're pretty captivated by his passion for the gospel, his authoritative preaching style, and really just biblical knowledge. And then they get into, you know, really what he believes after that point. But also when you look at Passion, may not be Reformed. They wouldn't really kind of tell me anything about what they believed theologically. It made them a little bit skittish. But when you look at the music is very much about the sovereignty of God. You know, when I talk about the sovereignty of God, transcendence of God really in particular, I'm not trying to kind of say that Reformed theology doesn't have a view of God's immanence, especially through Jesus Christ.
Mm-hmm.
But there just seems to be that emphasis on the transcendence of God in the music at Passion that is more particular to Reformed theology. So that's what attracted me about the Passion Conference, and I really had a really interesting time there.
So to put that in a little bit more layman terms, I understand what you're talking about from being a preacher and, you know, both of us studying theology.
Sure,
but we're talking about that there is an emphasis in Reformed faith that you started to see that God is central. He's central to the preaching. He's central in the worship. Now, some people might say, well, you know, what in the world are you talking about? We're talking about Christian churches. Of course God is central. Well, I just did a program the other day with Michael Horton, who was with me on the program from White Horse Inn.
White Horse Inn, yeah.
And we were talking about his book that's soon to come out, Christless Christianity.
Right.
That there are a lot of people that there's all the trappings of Christianity associated with conferences, with going to church, with whatever, you know, whatever is done in these movements, you know. But oftentimes Christ is not the central figure. He's not the exalted one. Whereas, if I understand right, that you pointed out here, Christ was the central figure, and that came out in all of these different aspects. And when you said that he was imminent, he is exalted and central, but he is also involved in the life of the people on a daily basis.
Yeah, that's right. And I think one thing that goes hand in hand with what we're talking about Reformed theology is something called expositional preaching, which basically is that you preach from a particular Bible text, and the point of the text is the point of your sermon, and that helps to keep God central. So the pastor is not passing along his seven pithy thoughts about X issue. The pastor is supposed to be deriving his views explicitly from Scripture and helping the congregation to make those connections in their own thinking.
Yeah.
So that goes hand in hand with the way Piper speaks at these events and the way really reformed people, I think, are helping to spread, helping to really increase Bible knowledge, I'd say, among the evangelical church, which is a major weakness right now.
Yeah, I've noticed that same thing. You know, of course, in Reformed circles, you're getting a lot of people reading the Puritans who were highly theological in their books, you know, delving deeply into the theology and sometimes writing books on one verse of Scripture and really, you know, just really delving into everything that was in there in that one verse in great depths. Great depth. And so that is certainly something that just kind of increased the Bible learning that we saw there among a number of young individuals that had come into the faith. And that's certainly a great thing.
Right. Absolutely.
So you mentioned their passion was the first one, and then you mentioned Piper. By the way, John Piper is he was born and raised right here in Greenville.
That's right.
In fact, right down the road here from the studio, and his dad was in our evening services. So I got to know his dad quite a bit before he went home to be with the Lord and attended his dad's funeral here that John Piper preached right down the road here from the studio.
Yeah.
But so we're certainly big fans of John Piper and all that he has done as well. You mentioned him at Passion, but then you went to Bethlehem itself, Bethlehem Baptist Church in Minneapolis, Minnesota. And what did you see when you went there?
Well, I saw one thing. I'm actually from South Dakota originally, so, you know, pretty similar to Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that's most fascinating about John Piper is just that, you know, he's a fiery Southerner, and that is not a fiery culture up there in Minnesota, not in the weather and not in the personality.
Yeah.
And so, in fact, I wrote, it's on the current issue of Christianity that's just coming out. I actually went back to Bethlehem Baptist Church and did a study of his church and a number of different expressions of Christianity in the Minneapolis area and kind of looked at some of the differences and contrasted them. But anyway, in my first visit, I went up there and I got a chance to just meet with him personally in his home, which was very gracious of him. And so I recount that visit in the book. And one thing that you just notice about John Piper is the consistency in his character from home to pulpit, but a radical inconsistency in, you know, how he comes across personality-wise, which I found to be very captivating, actually. You know, a very soft-spoken, quiet, deliberative man in private, and yet this very outgoing, authoritative preacher from the pulpit. And it was just a really fascinating window into his life that I had when I went up there. And I also got a chance to spend time with a lot of the college students who are a part of his church. And as Providence would have it, I guess you'd say, they were teaching through the 5 points of Calvinism. They were teaching through Tulip when I was up there. So I got to sit in on a discussion about unconditional election.
Hmm. Some people may get the impression that, you know, that's all that they do. You know, they think, you know, we're talking about Reformed faith, and now you're talking about them preaching that up there or teaching through it. And if they knew anything about the various ministries that flow out of Bethlehem Baptist Church,
right,
you know, the idea of adoption is a very big topic with them, of course, and they fund adoption within, you know, they have a fund created, and they did this many years ago. It's been going for many years now, where they help couples in the congregation that are interested in adopting children. And of course, it's a mixed congregation. Is that right?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's right downtown. It's downtown Minneapolis.
Mm-hmm.
So they've done. It's so tough with different congregations trying to reach out to different ethnicities, and that's been something they've been very deliberate about. In fact, as I point out in this article, back-to-back weeks celebrate well, Sanctity of Life Sunday, I think, is the week after Martin Luther King Jr. Day. Mm-hmm. John Piper talks about how at his church, they like to mix the categories up, and they like to celebrate both days mm-hmm. with a lot of gusto. Mm-hmm. So that's just one of the neat things about them. I should connect also. One thing I hit on consistently throughout the book, which I was so impressed by, was the desire for Reformed pastors and theologians to bring these scriptural truths home in our practice mm-hmm. and show how they make a difference in our behavior and in how we react to different events. And that's one thing that Piper hits on a lot. In fact, one of the things he told me when we went up there is how this Reformed theology is the stuff of life when he's talking to mothers of children with disabilities. Mm. You know, to know that this is not an accident,
yes.
but that the Lord is at work even in these tremendously difficult situations is of utmost comfort mm-hmm. to these parents. And I just think that really brings home the pastoral heart that Piper has and a lot of other people are involved in this movement.
Right. I mean, it's not just an academic exercise. This isn't just theology class 101, you know, where we're studying these things, but you're absolutely right. There is a heavy emphasis, and I would say that there must be a heavy emphasis on that we've got to go from doctrine to deeds.
Yeah,
it has to come out. It has to come out in how we live. Otherwise, I would even say that your theology is useless if your theology is not coming out then in the practice of every day. It must. That's the way it's portrayed to us in the scripture, and that's the way it's being preached, as you said. And certainly, I think that's the way it should be practiced as well.
It's why you don't see inconsistencies. You know, where so many people see inconsistencies between Paul and James. You know, from a Reformed perspective, you're looking there and you're seeing, no, this is the evidence of faith. This is the evidence of perseverance.
Mm-hmm.
Are these deeds? They go hand in hand with the belief.
Right. I think we obviously owe a great deal of debt, the Christian Church does, to John Piper articulating these things and, as you said, very consistently preaching these things over the year. I don't agree with everything that Piper says.
Sure.
In fact, I'm a little bit, just between me and you, we're just a little conversation here. But his latest conference I've been watching with some interest. Because I'm not a big fan of Mark Driscoll
and what
he has taken in some of the, we'll talk about Driscoll here in just a few minutes.
Sure,
I think.
Yeah, we will.
But I don't agree with that particular path that they're taking there, and I'm waiting for some of the fallout from this upcoming conference about words, about what we should do. And I'm just watching John Piper pretty closely on this one because it's an area that I differ. But that said, we owe him a tremendous amount of debt for these other areas, exalting the glory of God, focusing our attention on that blazing sun or blazing center, as he put it in one of his DVD series of the glory of God, and that's certainly something that nothing can't be taken away from him at all.
He's
done a great job. Let me jump down to Ground Zero, you call it, which you say is Southern Baptist Theological Seminary there in Louisville, Kentucky.
Dr.
Moeller was just with me on the program here about 2 weeks ago. In fact, on 9/11, we did a special broadcast from a chapter from his book, which is called Culture Shift. And the chapter was called All That Terror Teaches. The MP3 is out there for our listeners' sake. And just a wonderful work going on there at Southern. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Well, that was a very fun. I mean, I guess all the chapters were fun to write, but that was especially neat to dig into some of the history of exactly what happened at Southern Seminary. Now, this is a flagship of the largest Protestant body in the United States, but really had strayed quite far from its original theological vision, the confession, the statement of faith that the professors were bound to sign every year was not actually being followed through with and taught until they tapped. Southern Baptist Convention chose Dr. Moeller to take over the seminary when he was in his young 30s. This was in the early 1990s, so very young, but actually 97% of the faculty were either fired or left Southern Seminary after Dr. Moeller arrived. And what they told him, the people who were, of course, this was very controversial, what the people told him was that he would never be able to build a world-class, a respectable faculty that believed in inerrancy, and he's proven them wrong. Mm. I mean, this is one of the best faculties in the world, certainly among evangelicals, but of any stripe. And what I write about in the book is how I'm not sure people had fully thought through the implications of Dr. Moeller's Calvinism, which was an integral part of the founding of the Southern Baptist Convention, but changed dramatically in the 20th century, oddly enough, under the leadership of a very unreformed president of Southern Baptist Theological Seminary, that's E.Y. Mullins. And so the story really there, ground zero, is seeing Calvinism as a point of very serious contention right now in the SBC, and it seems to happen mostly over the issue of evangelism. And what I try to show in this chapter is that I don't think there needs to be this controversy over evangelism, because you can see it now, and you can see it all the way through history, where Reformed people are absolutely committed to evangelism. And so I don't think that needs to be a concern. Mm-hmm. A lot of people told me, well, if Calvinism becomes more influential in the SBC, well, then the SBC will really decline. Mm-hmm. Well, I don't see any evidence of that.
Yeah, and
so
of course
I don't think that's a concern.
Yeah, there was other issues there, too, with the folks being on the roll that had never even been converted. And so, they had these inflated rolls that were their listing of the people in the congregation that hadn't been to church in a year or so, So obviously that was just at this last convention was a big issue as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Dr. Moeller is doing a tremendous work, of course, not only, as you have said, has really just put together a world-class seminary program there. What do they have, about 4,000 students? Is that about?
Yeah, I'm not sure exactly on the precise number, but from what I could gather, I do believe it is the largest seminary in the world, from what I could gather.
So not only doing that job, but then also he's been kind of a spokesman for Reformed theology and evangelical churches. For these last couple of years has become kind of the go-to guy. I wouldn't be surprised if we see him on some of the major news channels here, even as we got more going on in the news here, even about economy and the way that we look at these things from a Christian perspective and those types of subjects. And a lot of times, of course, CNN or Fox News or whoever will have him on articulating what the evangelical position is on these things. So he's done a great service, not just in Reformed circles, but in evangelicalism as a whole.
And I think that's why some people who don't agree with him theologically give him a lot of leeway. They appreciate what he did just for people who believe in the inerrancy of Scripture, for standing up to that at Southern Seminary, and also for the way he's helped so many evangelicals think through very thorny cultural issues. He's very gifted at that on his own radio program, and now all these books that he's churning out. Yeah, he's a great gift to the church in a lot of different ways.
Right. He hadn't written for quite a while there.
Right.
Came out with Culture Shift. And once he was on that Knowing the Truth radio program, it just seemed to open up for him tremendously.
That's right. I'm counting on the same thing here for me. So, I'm just kidding.
Yeah. Ever since that, it just really opened wide up. Well, Colin, we've got to take one more break here. And when we come back from the break, maybe we'll spend a couple minutes discussing what you saw out there at Mars Hill in Seattle. That's certainly a little bit more controversial there, but something that we should discuss, I guess. And then we'll try to wrap this up a little bit on what have you seen now since you've written the book and the feedback that's coming back, those types of issues. I think that would be helpful. You're listening to an interview with Colin Hansen, editor-at-large for Christianity Today magazine, and we're talking about his book, Young, Restless, and Reformed. We'll be back in just a couple minutes.
You're listening to Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling. For more information about today's program, the radio ministry, and the resources we offer, go to www.knowingthetruth.org.
Hello, it's Bob Smith, host of Christian Talk 660's newest program, Defining Moments. Josh McDowell is internationally known through his books, speaking engagements, and personal evangelism. This Sunday, you can get to know Josh personally as our guest on Defining Moments. He'll tell us about his life, his family, how the Lord led him to this ministry, and his personal faith and passions. Join me Sunday at 2 as Josh McDowell shares his life through his Defining Moments.
Hey, Ruth, what's going on?
Hey, how you been?
I'm doing good. How about yourself?
Oh, I'm okay. You know, with the gas prices and everything, I just filled the tank of my car, and I spent almost my whole rent for this month.
Yeah, I know. Those gas prices are just outrageous. But you know what? I heard about CDBs. Not only do they have great pizza, but if you bring your gas receipt in, you get a dollar off.
Oh, that's great.
So you can take your whole family, have a great night, and still have some money left for gas money.
Oh, that's great.
It's great pizza for a great price. So pack up the family and head over to Speedy B's near Walmart on Woodruff Road in Greenville. And don't forget to bring your gas receipt for a dollar off the already amazing low price. At Speedy B's, you'll find friendly faces and at least a dozen pizzas out at all times. Or you can order a pizza. They'll make it fresh just for you at no extra cost. So visit Speedy B's today.
At least one in four businesses affected by a disaster, whether it's man-made or natural, never reopen.
Can you sign this for me, please?
Yet too many owners put off their company's disaster plan because they let too many day-to-day things get in the way.
Heavy fire showing from the ninth floor, second alarm being...
Disasters are unpredictable, so visit ready.gov to make your company's disaster plan. Ready.gov. It's never too late to protect your business until it is. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Homeland Security and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling. Information regarding the resources referenced on today's program can be found at www.knowingthetruth.org. Now, here to continue with today's program is Pastor Kevin Bowling.
Well, welcome back to the final segment today of the Knowing the Truth radio program. Let me give you that number here once again if you'd like to call and comment on what we've been talking about thus far. I've been talking about Young, Restless, and Reformed, which is the name of a book authored by Colin Hansen, who is the editor-at-large for Christianity Today magazine. The number here is 1-888-660-WLFJ. That's 1-888-660-9535. We're already giving away the tickets for the fireproof movie. I do have one more T-shirt if you're interested. Certainly a fireproof T-shirt. Be happy to give that to you as well. The topic we're talking about today, we've been talking about the Reformed faith and from the aspect of what Colin has written about. We're going to basically continue this conversation next week as well, because my special guest will be Dr. Steve Lawson, will be with me on the broadcast, and we're going to be talking about the expository genius of John Calvin. And like October, you know, is Reformation Month. And during Reformation Month, of course, I like to talk about this subject, and I thought, what better way to open the door? You want to hear some Reformed preaching. You want to hear Christ-exalted preaching. Let me tell you, there's none better than Dr. Steve Lawson. Just to really enjoy his ministry, heard him preach a message on Romans chapter 11, verse 36, I believe it was, closing verses of Romans chapter 11, and it was just outstanding, his Christ-exalting preaching, just wonderful. So he'll be with me on the broadcast on Tuesday, and then next Thursday, Paul David Tripp will be with me, and we'll be talking about peer pressure. What do you do when you see peer pressure in your children? How do you combat that? And so there's our broadcast for next week. Let's go back to our discussion now with Colin. Colin, let's talk a little bit about Seattle. Let's talk a little bit about Mars Hill and Mark Driscoll. Oop, wait a second, Colin. Let me get Melissa to put your mic up there. There we go. Okay,
yeah, I'm
sorry.
Here. Okay,
there
sorry about that.
It was on our side. That's fine.
Okay. I actually did not write about Mark Driscoll when I did the original article. It was because it was just a little bit too complicated to try to explain him in the context of a short article. And Mark is a relatively late addition to this phenomenon we've been talking about, but clearly a pretty rapidly growing contributor, considering all the books that he's publishing now, as well as the size of his church. You know, 5,000-plus people in Seattle, which has very few churches, one of the most unchurched areas in the country. So I wanted to go out there and check out this phenomenon, but also because, widely respected men like John MacArthur have shared some very concerning comments about Mark and mm-hmm. Mark's willingness to, early in his ministry, he definitely used some terminology that no Christian should be using. And even now, he uses some words, not swear words from the pulpit, but words that most pastors would not want to use. And like you alluded to, he refers to the Apostle Paul in his quote-unquote scatological language as justification for that. We'll see what he has to say. But one of the things I just wanted to look at was just what do the members of his church think of him? And also, what is the evidence of, what is the fruit of Christian faith in their lives? One thing I found is that the members of his church are very defensive of him, so they feel very strongly about that. Also, though, when you start to ask them a few other questions, get a little bit deeper beyond their defense, oftentimes they'll say things like, well, I might not have said that, or maybe he could have rephrased that a certain way. So even sometimes there's a little bit of cringing among some people within his church. Then the other element is just looking at the evidence. And I was very impressed to see people who had come from being so far from the Lord coming to walking with him and just learning the Bible, learning just how to live as Christians under his ministry and under the ministry of the elders of Marsville Church. So, so that was what I saw when I was out there, and it was really good to see that firsthand perspective on Mark. And he was gracious enough to host me in his home for a little while and see his library. Not surprisingly, he's one thing I mentioned in the book, he's a big fan of Charles Spurgeon and a big fan of Reggie Jackson. And I thought, how appropriate. That's pretty much Mark Driscoll. You know, he's a Spurgeon type of, he's very witty and sort of larger than life kind of personality, you know. And also sometimes, he always swings big, like Reggie Jackson, and sometimes he misses. So I just thought that was a perfect example. You know, he's got his little, he had a Spurgeon letter, and he had a bat, I think, that was signed by Reggie Jackson in his office. Yeah. So that was appropriate.
Yeah, that sounds pretty appropriate there, if you want to understand the wide swings of Mark Driscoll. I think that would fit it pretty good. I met him just recently. I met him at a banquet. I actually met him first in a pizza place, and you know, this was like 11:30 at night, and we both had a craving for pizza around the same time, and so we were in a hotel and had a large pizza area downstairs, but he came down, and so I talked to him for a few minutes. I didn't go into my my issues with him. It just wasn't appropriate to do it at that time, but I really am considering doing a program about it again. I did one previously called Profane Preaching, and I read those statements by John MacArthur that he had made and about Mark Driscoll. The part that is disturbing, and I don't want to turn this into a Driscoll bashing session, but the part that is disturbing me now with these new DVDs that are out, because he was speaking there at that upcoming, I think it's an upcoming conference. I just don't have the date in front of me here, but I don't think it's taken place yet. But at Piper's conference about words, where they'll be looking.
Weekend.
Okay. They released a number of DVDs as to why they were doing this. And in my estimation, rather than what was supposed to take place, is C.J. Mahaney and some of these other guys were supposed to be kind of mentoring Mark and getting him to quiet the lingo down and you know, to stop using this type of language from the pulpit, especially. And what seemed to be happening is he's converting more of them. You know, Piper has now had a few incidences. And then in this latest DVD that came out, he defends doing it, but as you were saying, by saying that this is the type of language that God uses, and since he uses language like this, that we're authorized, and even goes so far, you have to watch that DVD, but even goes so far as to say that those who don't use this type of language are cowards. Now, that that now we've got a whole different ball game here, and it, I think it needs to be addressed. But that said, there's my disclaimer on Mark Driscoll. That said, you mentioned about his church. He is preaching a Reformed theology, maybe not using all the words that we would, or maybe more words than we would. And it's in a grunge. It's in a grunge culture. You know, that grunge culture is huge in Seattle. I've been out there a few times, and it's huge there. And his church is full of people, not just recycling like we do here in Greenville, of people that just go from one church to the other and have been, you know, basically church their entire life. But these are people who have never gone into a church. And, you know, these are street people. This is a rough group. And yet he has been able to do this. Now, I would say he can do it without doing that with that language, that the gospel doesn't need that help. But nevertheless, that's what's taking place.
That's really the bottom line when it comes down to it. I also profiled Mark for Christianity Today magazine. And the bottom line question I had was, Is this language why people show up? Is this the reason they're attracted to Mark? And my impression was that it was not. That he could be a faithful, effective gospel preacher without that sort of language. But I mean, I fully admit it's an open question because he hasn't completely changed. You know, so we're not going to know until, you know, until that time when maybe his language does start to change. Again, that was a question I had to deal with, and I think it's still an open question today.
Yeah, certainly an anomaly. You know, you either love him or hate him, kind of is the different ways that people describe Mark Driscoll. So.
Yeah, love him and hate him was in the subtitle of that profile that I did with Mark. So I think that's an apt phrase for him.
Yeah, it seems to be. Okay, well, Colin, this has been very interesting, and I hope people will go out and read your book. We're under a minute here or so before we're going to start hearing that music here in just a minute or so. But, you know, how would you sum it all up? What's happened, or what sort of feedback have you received since doing it? And where would you leave us at here after discussing your book?
The feedback I've received has been almost universally positive. And I don't say that to puff myself up as a writer. I say it because what I wanted to do in this book was to share stories, especially of just ordinary Christians who are trusting God to do extraordinary things. And what I hear from people is that this book is telling their story. It's not them necessarily, but in these other people's experiences of God's mercy and his transcendent glory, that they are seeing their own experiences, their own encounters with Christ. And that is what gives me the greatest joy as an author, to be able to help connect them in that way and help them to understand themselves better by looking at what's happening with these other Christians.
Hmm. And in doing this, this became your story, didn't it?
Well, it was really, you know, as a journalist, you definitely do your best to try to keep some distance with what's going on. But certainly this was, you know, this a lot of these stories do reflect my same experience. And finally, when everything came full circle, when I went home to my farm, my family's farm in South Dakota, and ran into a couple of my friends who were there when I had received Christ as a 15-year-old, and to see that they were faithfully preaching God's word, they were reading a lot of the same books that I was, they're preaching Reformed theology in these little but very faithful church plants in small towns in South Dakota. Just such a grace note, I think, and why I really wanted to close the book that way.
Well, Colin, thank you very much for calling in today and talking with us about your book and about your own experiences. I think it's an excellent resource. We highly recommend it. That's Young, Restless, and Reformed. It's out by Crossway. You can go out to www.crossway.org. Colin, thanks for taking the time to be with us on the program today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Okay. Let me just remind you again that next week on Tuesday and Thursday, first of all on Tuesday, Dr. Steve Lawson, the expository genius of John Calvin, and then on Thursday, Paul David Tripp will be my guest and we'll be talking about peer pressure. Remember, the Lord Jesus Christ said, "You shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free." That truth is found in the Word of God. And so this Sunday, get out there to church, hear the Word preached. We'll see you again next week.
You've been listening to Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling. Knowing the Truth is the outreach ministry of the Mountain Bridge Bible Fellowship, located on Highway 25 in Traveler's Rest. For more information about the church and radio ministry, visit us on the web at knowingthetruth.org.
The opinions expressed on today's program are those of the announcers, their guests, and callers, and do not necessarily represent those of the staff and management of His Radio Network, the Radio Training Network, or Clear Channel Communications.
Life-changing teaching and talk for the Carolinas. Enjoy.